unlike many others, I was privileged enough to know the handlers. And my understanding.
Okay, very good. Speaking of recruitment, we talked a little bit about this off camera, but I Richard Araujo, who wrote the most recent book on steak knife, his belief, he said he's not 100% sure on it, but his belief was that the steak knife was recruited because he got caught with like a building tax scam thing, and they would use it against him. You always maintain,
Well,
including
I don't. Yeah, I can't see that because one, it would be no value to us. The only person or the only organization that would have that knowledge is the RUC. So, and they would use it for their own nefarious reasons. And the second reason, which is the and forgive me here, but the gentleman that you had on your podcast, who was the author of the new book.
Richard.
Yeah, he also makes the point that it wasn't in the DNA of the fruit to use blackmail as the primary motivation, or not primary, any motivation. So it doesn't fit. And bear in mind that steak knife was ran for the best part of 2 decades. It's unlikely. Given that motivation, that he would have run for that longevity with that motivation.
You're still like you're still of the fairly strong belief that he was a walk-in.
That's my understanding. I've never had any access. See, the absolute truth is it's contained within the original contact file. So every meeting, so if he was a walk-in, it would all be documented so that the true story is there or would have been there for all to see. I was never privileged enough to have seen it, but unlike many others, I was privileged enough to know the handlers. And my understanding is that it was a walk-in. But as I say, others may know better, but I doubt it.
Fair enough. I was cautiously, optimistically hoping that the Canova report would shed some light on it. Did you expect it to, or would you expect to find
Well,
it more?
what do I expect for £40 million? I expect a lot more than I've got. If I was looking at this as a member of the public or the victim's family, I'd feel short. Me personally, I would feel shortchanged. That there is nothing in there which hasn't been in the news, really. Okay? Or, unless you can think of a top line, or using a journalistic term, what's the top line in there? The top line would be a very ambivalent. There is more people. He cost more lives than he saved. That's the so-called top line. Well, even that is worthy of analysis. Okay, so let's say, for example, it's a profit and loss in an accountancy environment or in a business environment. So, essentially. What Mr. Boucher is saying in a roundabout way is that, as far as he's concerned, more people were badly affected than were positively affected by the activities of State Knife. Now, he's using, I think it varies, a figure between 14 and 19 murders. I think my own personal opinion is I think State's probably closer to the 30, 34. But
Sorry,
let's take,
being responsible for them, he's
yeah.
probably.
Or involved in the actual event or had knowledge of the planning and execution of. But let's assume the 14 that he is that they are confident they can lay a glove on. So, Me personally, I can think, unlike the Brian Nelson case, I can personally think of three cases where he saved the life of an agent given as advance notice. And the unquantifiable aspect of this is it's not a binary situation. And I'll add to that by saying this. The destabilizing effect of an agent at the upper echelons of any organization are unquantifiable in regards to how it affects that organization. So just taking the numerics, and Mr. Boucher knows this. This is why he's playing semantics. It's a very shallow card trick. And in contrast, and I'm going to give a defense here, so John Stevens did the same thing. So the evidence that was given by Gordon Kerr to the Brian Nelson case was Gordon Kerr alleged on oath that there had been many, many tens of lives. I think it was into the realms of 100. And then that was subsequently investigated. And Sir John Stevens on record is saying that he considered bringing proceedings for perjury because he could find evidence, not evidence of one. So even if he'd found two, it certainly wasn't into the figures of tens. So the contrast is that in Mr. Boucher's case, it's there is no meat on the bone. All you've got is a skeleton. And what you would want for £40 million, I'd want fillet steak. But I've got skin and bones and next to nothing else. And I think it's genuinely, Me and Boucher, I've got a bit of a history. I took tasks with him right at the early stages, and he wanted to make meetings with me. And I told him, I will meet with you, but only when you substantiate to me that you're a man of action. And to get a long story short, he offered at the start, halfway through, and towards the end. I declined all because I'd seen no evidence of his serious intent to investigate this because I ran agents within and reporting on his organization and knew exactly what he was doing. And I was always comfortable with the fact that my initial analysis was correct. So, hence the reason why I always videoed my interactions with his investigators. And a few of those have been played on Panorama and such forth. And I don't do that. I didn't do that for any other reason than that's my tradecraft. And that's what I would expect, he would expect, and ultimately it gives a an authoritative position of who said what, where, when, and how, because I don't trust Mr. Boucher, and I presume Mr. Boucher doesn't trust me. But where I ask him is to put some meat on the bones, and that comes down to the simple things like the documentation. What do you have and what don't you have? Because only upon that, if we have clarity, can you take a reasonable position. You yourself, John, can say, right, well, if he's only got 50-60% of the documents which we know were in existence, then how can he come to an informed position on almost any subject matter? You know what I mean? He can't. And that I feel is probably the reason why the PPS has said lack of evidential quality is there, because they will know there's an audit trail. And Mr. Boucher doesn't touch on the audit trail. He doesn't say what we know was in existence, what we have today. But fortunately, I have them on recordings admitting that the figure I have is between 50 and 60% of the Scappa Tichy documentation. And That leaves a really big chasm, which is certainly incomplete for him to take any authority position on almost anything. And you can be absolutely assured, the handlers, they're skilled people. They're not going to be interviewed by the police and give them anything which is going to incriminate themselves. And neither is anybody in a position of management. So you're not going to get any help from them. So the only thing that he can rely upon is either Mr. Scappicicci giving an honest, in-depth interview on the record, under oath, having been cautioned, and that didn't happen. Or they have the documentation and they haven't got that. And if Mr. Boucher wants to take issue with me on that, he can come back and correct what both me and the Irish Times have asked him, which is to confirm that element of it. And I hesitate to guess here, John, but I will gladly go and show my ass on Preston Town Hall Square if he does do that.
Just to wrap up the Scappicicci recruitment thing, what reason do you think, or you'd have some reason to believe that he would become a walk-in? And it was interesting. He was interned obviously in the early 70s, and he actually could have gotten out early if he just signed a thing saying he wouldn't like associate with the IRA and stuff. So earlier on, it actually looked like he would be a more staunch on.
So my understanding is there was a severe beating and that he wanted to take revenge. Now, of all the motivations, of all of them, that is without doubt the most powerful.
This being personal revenge.
Yeah, but personal revenge then moves forward. And if you listen to the Culloden Hotel, the Sylvia Jones, and if you listen to the venom that is in that recording, the way it is delivered, that in itself is a subliminal message in regards to who he feels as has wronged him.
And there are those, including Richard Arawe, who he said was pretty convinced that the Scap had some kind of like deal, or maybe had dirt on someone such that he felt safe that he would never be exposed because then he could then expose others. Do you think it's
I don't, I don't, I don't subscribe to that. And what I do know for a fact is in the Breenham Buchanan, I know he had conversations with the Breenham Buchanan legal team in the Republic in regards to giving a statement in regards to his role. But and my understanding from very good sources is that in turn, the state, that is this state, said that if you were to do that, you would lose your two things. You would expose yourself to civil litigants, which we wouldn't defend you, and you would have to cover the legal costs. You would also expose yourself to criminal liability, which would also then put you in a position. So, in other words, all the way up to his death, the state paid for his legal fees all the way throughout this, and he had so much to lose, and they had so much over him in the sense that even his estate, let me put it that way. So when you die, you have an estate. Now, have you seen any probate for that estate? Have you seen any legal papers for that estate?
I wouldn't see them probably if they existed or
Oh,
not.
you would have went through probate, but equally the lawyers would have been entitled to see that from a disclosure point of view, because if Mr. Boucher puts two and two together and connects the dots, then that estate would become liable and would have become liable when he was a living entity, never mind a deceased entity. So there are legal repercussions which allowed the state to apply pressure. As I say, Brendan Buchanan, I know for a fact he was in tentative negotiations with him. I genuinely think there was a point in time where he wanted to get it off his chest. That's my understanding.
You said earlier, Scap Steak Knife was an agent for 20 years. That's not I don't believe that's the
I
common.
said, okay, so I believe, what timeline do you think he ceased to be an agent?
Ceased being an agent. I couldn't tell you the year, but I think when
You think Sandy Lynch?
I'm not sure exactly off the top of my head where to place that,
Yeah,
but
I
when
think
Scap
he
started
stood
getting like
down.
ostracized within the
I
area.
think he stood down from the fruit in from the fruit, as in the I think he stood down in the middle of 95.
Middle of 95, okay.
He's
And take
certainly
on
there
when?
interviewing people without, he's certainly active in 94 after the Derek Martindale murder. Now, Sinn Féin would have you believe he was stood down after the Sandy Lynch case.
Which what you remind us?
Well, Sandy Lynch case was in 91, but then he goes on the run to Dundalk. He then returns in early 92, and that's when he's arrested, but the subsequent gets off. And Sinn Féin would have you believe, as soon as Sandy Lynch takes place in 91, that he stood down. But that's a lot of bollocks.